Welcome to Eagle Eye.
What a break from Manoa.
Interviewing your favorite USA Eagles around the globe.
Tony Limbaugh into the 22.
Now, here's your host, Bill Baker.
Hey everybody, welcome to Eagle Eye. I'm Bill Baker. Today I have Oxford student Nick Civetta on the show. We go into depth about his studies and how difficult it is and what the future looks like for Nick possibly after rugby with these master's degrees. And also, we go into what the Oxford rugby program looks like. And he's going to have an American friend coming up in the spring as well, another Oxford student. So stay tuned to find out who that is. We also go into a bit about USA rugby and what we're missing out in this year and what his future is on the field as well. Hope you enjoy the interview. Hey.
How are we doing?
Good. How are you doing, Nick?
I'm doing all right.
Luck in the stash.
Thank you. Thank you. It's I'm very proud of it.
So you must have been tough to get rid of all this other stuff, though, huh?
Oh, it's been a long time since I've seen my chin, and I cannot wait to put it back behind a beard.
That's brilliant. So anyway, first things first, congrats on your engagement.
Thank you. Thank you. That is, we're very, very happy just trying not to think about planning a wedding right now.
It's hard to plan anything right now. Jeez.
Not the right time. We're very happy.
How long you guys been together?
4 years. 4 years. We met in Newcastle. So it's good. It's very good. She keeps me sane. I think I don't drive her crazy, so it's all good.
That's always a plus for a long lasting relationship. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I told my wife I was interviewing you today. She says, so you have to ask him for me how you proposed to her. So that's for her. How did you propose to her?
Well, I proposed to her in our dining room. Actually, right here. Like, literally right next to me. See, like, right by that stairwell over in the corner. That's where it happened. So it was our four-year anniversary. And I had the ring made by a friend in France, which was great. And so that's was a tiny bit special, I guess. And she had cooked this fancy meal. And after the meal, I just did it. I just did it. It was, it was good.
So how did your move go from France to Oxford? How did that all work out?
It was pretty smooth. I mean, logistically, it was pretty smooth. We had to quarantine on the UK side when we got here. So we quarantined at Gabby's family's house up in Sunderland and then came down to Oxford. But we were lucky enough to spend the summer in Brittany, which is like just one of the most beautiful places in the world, and have sort of basically from March onwards with no rugby. And Gabby was working, but I had very little schedule. So I was very privileged throughout the entire thing to be in a beautiful place and get to experience the best of Brittany for a few months.
So talking about Oxford now, so have your classes started?
Oh, I'm in the thick of it. I've been working all day and just pulled away for a second to do this interview. So
thank you.
It's a good to have a break. It's good. It's coming at crunch time at the end of the semester. So I have three pretty big assignments due over the holidays. One's due next week. I'm working on today, so it's good. The class has started. It's been incredible. The pace at which you learn here is like just insane. So it's been a great experience so far, and I'm hoping I continue enjoying it as much as I am, even though I'm like literally just drowning in essays to write.
Schoolwork, So you're going for your master's in renewable energy. Is that correct?
Yeah, more or less. I mean, it's a master's in energy systems, so it's not necessarily renewable energy, but it's more about, you know, how energy systems relate to each other around the world, how it affects, you know, everything from generation in your own home to, you know, geopolitics. So it's a wide-ranging course that sort of covers all the interdisciplinary problems in energy. And I think it's very interesting and relevant, and it's definitely the industry I want to be in. I'm not exactly sure where, but it's good stuff.
Well, a little more specifically about the major, the master's. So all systems. So originally I was thinking, just windmills, solar farms, that kind of thing. But it's much more grand than that. It's the entire scheme, pretty much, is what you're saying.
Yeah. I mean, it's not going to be one technology that solves climate change, right? It's going to be a mix of, you know, hundreds of different types of technology. And there is still, I mean, obviously there is still a necessity of fossil fuels for the coming generation, unfortunately. So, you know, how to make them cleaner and how to get rid of them as quickly as possible is a big focus of current research in energy. And yeah, I mean, it's the breadth of it, the breadth of the course is and the breadth of the subject matter is impressive. Yeah.
So maybe without getting political, yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
And speaking of energy, sorry. I mean, what's holding, say, the USA back from getting into more renewables? I mean, it seems like, is it money?
The USA is getting into more renewables.
It is, but it seems like we could be the forerunners of this whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a very good question. So you obviously want an administration that's going to be, you know, pushing hard for renewables, which we haven't had the last 4 years. So In the future, I mean, honestly, the U.S. will get into it because it's good business. Like if you look at Texas, for example, right now, like I think something like 90% of energy projects that are coming onto the Texas grid right now are renewable projects. So like think about Texas, you think about oil and gas, but all their new generation is solar and wind because it's cheaper and it's better. Like so like it is the future. And like the U.S. is starting to realize like, oh, man, this is the cheapest way to make electricity. We need to start doing more of this, and they will. It's just a question of time. I mean, the other issues to solve are like transportation and everything, and that's a different animal altogether.
That's true. Yeah, where I so I'm just north of Boston, and we have this whole area of New England has definitely been working on the renewables. We have wind farms, all the solar farms as well.
Yeah,
farms in the ocean. But the biggest complaint I ever hear of, apparently it kills millions of birds, but it's just their eyesores, which just cracks me up. You know, I mean,
yeah.
I understand, that's the worst you can do. Yeah, yeah.
It's an eyesore. Like a coal plant is an eyesore, and it also is a lung sore, and, you know, it emits more radiation than a nuclear plant. So, like, I don't understand that argument. I mean, I guess if you have a $10 million house on the beach and you have to look at some wind farms, you might be peeved and use your little levers to try to make them move the wind farm. But, yeah, I think it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's a minuscule price to pay, isn't it?
Yeah, I would think so personally, but yeah, I don't have that $10 million house in the ocean. But all right, that's enough of that.
That's another conversation.
That's another conversation. Yeah, we have more time. So here you are. You're in Oxford. You're following the footsteps of Bill Clinton and Christofferson, two who have played for Oxford. Didn't play in the varsity match, but they went to school there and played. Little weight in your shoulders here. You got to keep up the reputation of those two.
Yeah, hopefully I can keep up with some illustrious characters there. Also, former Japanese prime minister played here. I mean, there's been a number of notably famous people, but obviously Americans. I mean, there's Chris Prentice played here back in the day, and a couple of Cal guys, Gary Hine, the guy's name I'm blanking on. So, yeah, there's been a long history of Americans playing at Oxford, and I'm hoping to, fall in good stead.
Now, are you in class, or is it hybrid, or how is that working out over there?
Luckily for my master's, it's been a hybrid, honestly, but we've been able to go into class. So for the first sort of 4 weeks, we were in person, and just in a very big lecture hall, socially distanced. I think we were one of only two masters at the university, or two courses at the university, that were in person still. Everyone else was online. We were lucky for about 4 weeks, and then the lockdown came around, and basically what they said is they'd leave the lecture hall open for us and we can go in, but then we have to watch the lectures on Zoom. So it's a bit mixed. And when there's group work, it's good to be around your group. So we tend to go in and keep our distance. It's honestly, it's been good. And the Zoom learning stuff you get used to, and it's a bit of a pain, but you still learn.
Yeah, you gotta do what you gotta do.
Yeah.
So Oxford rugby, paint a picture for us that don't know a lot about the history. I'm assuming you read up on the history of Oxford rugby or know a little bit about it. What does the rugby program look like there at Oxford?
God, it's unique in its setup and how it operates within like the club system in the UK. It's a mix of guys who are 17-year-old freshmen and, 30-year-olds like myself, 31-year-old like myself. So, you know, you have a huge variation in levels, and we have, you know, basically three sides with the top sort of 30 or 40 guys fighting to play in the one match each year that matters, which is against Cambridge. So that's, you know, the goal of everyone on the team is to end up playing in the varsity match and to get a blue. So the entire sort of year is geared around that. You don't play in a university league, but you play in like some pretty good fixtures leading up to that match. So you play like Premiership A teams during the week, and we play the Army and the Navy and invitational sides. Like they were supposed to play the Barbarians in May. Hopefully that fixture gets reorganized. So at the top end, it ends up being, when you lace up your boots, a good level of rugby. But it is a university club, and we do have, like, you know, we have a good gym, we got good strength coaches and medical staff and good head coaches, etc. But it's not a professional environment.
So with that senior side, which you're saying just plays a few matches, you know, the players, I know when I watched last year, I recognized half the names that were on that team. You know, I've seen them play one way or another, either in championship or premiership. You know, I just even then watching, say, how does that work? How do they get these players? There has to be some kind of eligibility issues as far as you need to be a student.
You have to be a student. So you can't play unless you're a student. And, you know, in the last sort of 10, 15 years, there's been very few ways or almost no ways to get into Oxford without being qualified to study at Oxford. I mean, back in the 80s and 90s, there used to be degrees at both Oxford and Cambridge called like land economy, where the idea was if you were an international rugby player, you'd at some point study at Oxford. And you'd study land economy, and it was sort of, you know, wink, wink, nod, nod, and you'd get you in and you play in the varsity. But that was back before rugby was professional. So that was, you know, almost the highest level of rugby in the UK was the varsity match. But now it's, yeah, I mean, everyone has interesting backgrounds and are studying, you know, their own things. I'll be joined by Drew Durotalo in January, which will be amazing. So I have another American here. And yeah, it always seems that both clubs manage to, you know, understand the world rugby environment and figure out who they could possibly convince to try to come and do a degree. So we have Benjamin Kaiser here as well right now. He's a French hooker, and trying to think who else off the top of my head. But Kieran Amile, who's played, you know, 200 something times in the Premiership. So I mean, there's good rugby players here, and we'll get hopefully a few more come January.
Yeah, have you gotten together as a group yet?
So we trained we had like a preseason week back in, I guess it was September now. Yeah, September. And then we trained, you know, twice a week on the pitch for the next couple of weeks with a few like preseason weekends in there up until lockdown. So we were getting, you know, we were building towards an eventual varsity match in the spring.
Is that like the freshmen's on to your age? Everyone together?
Everyone, yeah. Wow. Everyone together. But we train in three different groups, right? So you train in, there's basically first, seconds, and thirds. And because of the coronavirus regulations, you can only train in groups up to, I think it was 20. So we basically break up 20-20-20, and we just play a lot of fitness touch because that's about as physical as we could get.
Right. So the varsity obviously is not happening this fall. And you're thinking it's going to happen in the spring or late winter?
It's probably going to happen in the spring, is the idea. So, I mean, obviously everything is very fluid at the moment. So the plan is to play it in March sometime, but, I'm not sure, exactly when, you know, so we're having similar problems here.
Yeah. So when did that get into your mind that, you could be, you know, get a blue, you know, is this something you've thought about for a long time?
I think the origins of it were when I was in Newcastle. I had a roommate. Well, I wasn't a roommate at the time, but a friend named Sam Edgerton who had played at Oxford. And he spoke so highly about the experience, and he was one of the most successful Oxford players ever. You know, three blues. He was man of the match in two of them. Only Oxford player to ever get a red card. Only red card ever in him. So he had this storied history of just being the man. And he spoke so highly about the school and the experience. And then the following year, my roommate, a guy named Don Waldick, who actually played in Ohio in pro rugby, he was playing at Falcons with me. He got into Oxford to do a sustainable development course, and he spoke really highly about it. So between their experience there, I sort of decided that, you know, later on in my career, I'd give it a go and see if I could get in. So yeah, it ended up working out. So.
So you're able to play with other clubs if that was available to you right now, correct? So with Premiership picking up now, and I know there's no championship yet, I mean, has there been any interest? Have you looked into that at all?
Yeah, I definitely have. So the degree I'm doing is part-time, so the idea is to do the degree and to be able to play rugby at a high level. I've spoken to a few clubs over the last couple of months, but the timing hasn't been right with my course. Mm-hmm. So, you know, now I'm entering a period where it's the holidays and my course sort of slows down. So I'll be able to hopefully find some rugby to play in the coming months. But then sort of January to March again, I'm in class. So it'll be difficult to do a lot of pro rugby. So we'll see if I find the right opportunity here where a team's, you know, willing to work with me on study weeks to let me be in Oxford or just sit at home on Zoom, then I think it could work out. And obviously I want this to happen because I want to keep on being a rugby player. So any opportunity that comes up, I'll jump at.
Well, and speaking of that, I mean, there hasn't been a lot of opportunities for the American players. I mean, you look at, you know, Lamborn, Hiltebrand, Brocky, Big Joe, whoever, they've been playing a bit, you know. Mm-hmm. Tony's season just ended, and he has phenomenal season. Now, seeing them, I mean, I know you've been keeping up with them. You must have been biting at the bit to get out and start playing rugby.
Oh, my God, what I'd give to hit a ruck right now, to win a lineout. I think, I mean, it's not just me. It's every guy who's sitting at home in America. I mean, all of us are shopping at the bit. A few guys got to play in that Bermuda Classic, and now they can't wait to play 15s again. So Bermuda Classic, Bermuda 10s. I'm itching for violence. I just can't, I can't hold it in. So we'll see how I go. It's going to happen soon. It's important that this pandemic gets sorted out first, and rugby still is like kind of secondary to the public health. So.
Yeah. And you look at the USA setup, you know, I talked to Gary not long ago, and mm-hmm. you really stressed how difficult this has been on the USA program, let's say, not playing at all.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned we had a bunch of matches lined up. You had at least 10 weeks of training together. And then you look at a lot of these tier one nations like New Zealand, all the Southern Hemisphere, you know, the Six Nations, they're playing. And in my mind,
we're falling behind.
You're falling behind. Good. Exactly.
I mean, it's not good. I mean, you do what you can, but the bottom line is, like, as a team in general, a tier two team, you don't get as much time together to begin with. So, like, to be in a situation now where we could go, who knows? I mean, until next summer, maybe, without a test.
Yeah.
You know, that's 2 years, man. Almost, like, it's insane, and without a test and without an opportunity to be together. So, it's just like, I don't know. I think it's concerning. I mean, obviously, we're doing our part as best we can. The guys who aren't playing, we're staying fit, and we're in contact with Hugh and Gary as much as we can be. But it's not the same. Like, you need to play and you need to get together as a group. So teams like us and Canada and, you know, a few others, Japan as well, are really, I think, falling behind.
Yeah. And, you know, in those, like you mentioned, the Bermuda 10s a minute ago, we had a number of players there, but just, you know, you watched, that was fun to watch, but, you know, everyone's rusty, and it's just, and it hurts too, because now you look at MLR that you're well aware of, after two seasons, and things are looking good. You know, we're getting a lot of more quality playing time. A handful of the teams are starting up academy programs, you know, high performance centers. So mm-hmm. to see all that coming in, and you just want that to boil up together. And right now you just can't, you know?
Yeah. It's massively frustrating. And I think the good thing is that timing wise, I mean, obviously we missed out on last summer's tests and ARC November tests. So that's a significant number of tests. But, like, if you look at what's coming up, is that everyone involved in the US setup should be playing going into next summer. So should be playing either MLR or overseas. So that by the time we do assemble again, guys have played 10 to 15 games and are back in some sort of form. But it's still a difficult time, and it's obviously a difficult time to not have much in the way of capital, so you can't spend your way out of an issue.
So Nick, looking back a bit over your career so far, I mean, you've traveled some serious rugby miles. I mean, from, you know, Italy, England, France, Japan, back to England, as far as, you know, World Cups, and whatever. But if you look back, I mean, what have been some of the highlights for you?
That's a tough question. Obviously, the big one is getting to a Rugby World Cup. That was special, and that was the culmination of a lot of hard work and travel, and you know, putting myself in situations that I wasn't necessarily comfortable in to begin with, and then to try to come out of them, you know, having improved and taking, you know, slow steps up a mountain type of thing. So I think that was, and you know, honestly, the last year in France, I really did enjoy, and it did feel a bit like icing on the cake after a World Cup to go to France to be involved in a great team. And Van is a great team to be involved with, and I was playing a lot. I was playing very well, I think, and they were happy. I was happy, and you know, I guess just this opportunity just was one of the few things that would make me leave a place like that. The opportunity to come study in Oxford. So. I think the last sort of 2 years have been really special.
So looking at the future, obviously we've talked to you a bunch about MLR, but the real question here is, you've played on both coasts. You've been in San Fran, been in New York. If it came up and you had a choice, which team would you, or really should I say, which team would your fiance choose? Which city?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, listen, I'm a New York guy, born and bred, so I'll just leave it at that. So I think, that's certainly a possibility in the near term as well. I think with the season coming up and then the scheduling of my course is possible, I could play in the MLR this year. So that's on the horizon. If it all works out, then that could be a very good plan.
Finally, Nick, post rugby, obviously a person that goes for two masters has a plan, right?
I don't know. I have no idea.
That's why you're going for your second.
But
you obviously love what you're doing there. You've gone for, you know, engineering and this. I mean, what is it about those energy or these classes you've taken that you see doing later? I mean, what is it about it that drives you to take these classes?
Oh, with the at risk of sounding like, you know, really cliche, like solving the energy crisis is like a huge, huge issue for the next 50 years. And it's not something that's solved, you know, by one pie in the sky technology or by one person or one government. Like there's so many little problems to work on and like every problem is different. And I think that, you know, if you want to have, I don't know, I think I do want to have a career where I find a lot of value in what I do and hopefully, you know, affect the world in some small way. And I think working in energy is a way to do that. Every problem you work on can be different and interesting and have value. And I think that's why I'm enticed by this field. And, you know, I hope, after this degree, I have a good idea of where I want to go with it. Cause right now I'm not entirely sure.
Right. You do wind up in that field. That's amazing. And I think you're going to do wonderful things because of everything you've done so far. And the rugby pitch has seemed to work out so far.
If you keep grinding away at something, eventually you see some returns, right? So that's the way you got to be it every day.
Yeah. All right, Nick, listen, good luck. It's been fun talking to you. Good luck in school. Good luck with rugby coming up. And looking forward to seeing Dura out there with you as well in the winter and see what kind of damage you guys can do together.
Yeah, I feel bad for the students he's going to be running for.
Especially that 17-year-old flanker.
All right. Well, thanks. It was a great time.